Following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Look and See audio production, where entertainment is always free.
Time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to the Swag Cast. This is Bill Holwig again, and tonight we're going to feature some slices from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, which was sometimes abbreviated as CBS RMT. Which was an ambitious and sustained attempt during the 70s to revive the great drama of old-time radio. The series was created by Hyman Brown, a radio legend due to his work on Inner Sanctum Mysteries and other shows dating back to the 30s. On CBS affiliates, the series began its long run on January 6, 1974 until December 31, 1982. Total of 1,399 original episodes. Total number of broadcasts, including reruns, was 2,969. The format was similar to that of classic old-time radio shows such as The Mysterious Traveler and The Whistler, in that a host, E.G. Marshall, introduces each episode and provides some pithy wisdom throughout, but unlike the hosts of earlier programs, Marshall is fully mortal, merely someone whose heightened insight plunged the listener into the world of the macabre. The show began with the ominous sound of a creaking crypt door slowly opening to invite listeners in for the evening's adventure, accompanied by Marshall's disturbing utterance, "Come in. Welcome. I am E.G. Marshall." At the end of each show, the door would swing shut, followed by Marshall's classic sign-off, "Until next time, pleasant dreams," segueing into the show's haunting woodwind theme music. Marshall hosted the program every year but the final one when actress Tammy Grimms took over maintaining the format. Prominent actors from radio and screen performed on the series, from Fred Gwynne, Mercedes McCambridge, Norman Rose, Tony Roberts, Howard DeSilva, Celeste Holm, Morgan Fairchild, Larry Haynes, Paul Hecht, Kim Hunter of Planet of the Apes fame, Zira anyone, Mason Adams, a young John Lithgow, and many others. In 1975, CBS RMT won the prestigious Peabody Award, and in 1990 was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. Hope you enjoy, and keep an ear out for The Avengers, and of course, Dark Shadows.
And now, I'm going to turn it over to E.G. Marshall.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the fear you can hear. Welcome to the world of terrifying imagination. Our suspense-filled tale is about two ladies. One heedless, one, alas, headless. To meet them both, we shall have to span an ocean and several centuries. The story of both ladies comes from Rudley Castle in the Cotswold Hills of England. But the tale of the first lady belongs in this century, while the legend of the second comes riding to us out of the medieval past.
Charles! Charles!
What?
Charles, wake up! Can't you hear them? There they are again!
What is it, Beth?
The hoofbeats! This time they're coming straight for the house.
Where are you going, Beth?
I've got to see.
It's the dead of night. You can't see anything.
It's bright moonlight. Oh, God. She's right in the courtyard below. She's stopping.
You're out of your mind.
She's throwing back the hood of her cape.
You come back to bed.
Oh, she has no head.
There's nothing out there.
Oh, no. Her head in her hands. She's holding it up by the hair. Charles, come quick, quick!
All right, I'm coming.
The face, it looks 1,000 years old. Oh, it's my face, Charles. Help me. It's me.
Our mystery drama, A Lady Never Loses Her Head, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Kim Hunter. It is sponsored in part by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal, and by new sugar-free Diet 7-Up. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Oh, somebody's been drinking my sugar-free Diet 7-Up, and it's all gone!
Well, actually, I saved a little.
Oh, a bear!
Hiya, Goldie, what's brewing?
That's Goldilocks to you.
Oh, come on, kid. You mean you don't remember me? The cottage, the three chairs, the porridge?
Baby Bear!
In the fur. Been a long time, Goldie.
But Baby Bear...
Just call me BB.
You drank all the sugar-free Diet 7-Up, and I have to conduct another diet drink taste test today.
Well, yeah, I saw the sign on the door, a professional taste tester, huh?
But how can I conduct my taste test now?
Why bother? I tried those other diet drinks, too. You'll notice there's still plenty of them around. Why not ask me?
Well, okay, BB. Tell me. Why did you drink all the sugar-free Diet 7-Up?
I like the taste. Light, fresh, natural, sugar-free Diet 7-Up is definitely unbearably delicious.
Mm-hmm.
The title of our tale is A Lady Never Loses Her Head. This has been an accepted dictum since the beginning of recorded history. But in the literal sense, in feudal times, a lady unfortunately could, and frequently did, lose her head. Thank heavens, of course, that is no longer possible. Or is it? Let's travel to London and start our narrative in the gloomy, gray atmosphere of Scotland Yard.
Excuse me, Inspector.
Yes, Cruthers, what is it?
Young lady outside to see you. Most attractive. Blue-eyed, blonde hair, about 24. American, about
yes,
five...
Yes, I can do without the vital statistics. Does she have a name?
Yes, sir. Beth Stanton. Miss.
Beth Stanton. Stanton? My old friend Biff's daughter. Well, don't just stand there, man. Bring her in.
Right this way, Miss Stanton.
Thank you, Sergeant.
My dear girl, you are Biff Stanton's daughter, of course.
Of course.
Oh, how nice to meet you. Come in, come in. Dear me, this is a pleasure. Oh, do sit down.
Oh, thank you, Inspector Finchley.
Tell me, what are you doing in England?
Well, first, before anything, following Dad's orders and coming to see you. Also, I brought you something from him.
Really?
I should have brought it earlier or sent it, but... Well, after he died, I was a mess. For so long, it had just been the two of us. It took me a year to paste myself back together again.
I wish I could have helped. At the very least, I should have come over for the funeral.
Oh, there was none. Dad wouldn't have wanted that.
I can imagine.
Anyway, he wanted you to have this.
Oh, no, no, I can't.
No, you have to.
Biff Stanton's wings. Any idea what they mean to an old fogey who went through the Battle of Britain shoulder to shoulder with him? I can tell you something, my dear. These mean more to me than the crown jewels.
You know, you're everything Dad said you'd be. Hello for real, Uncle Alfie.
After that, what can I do to make England yours?
Not a thing. It's already mine.
Oh, how so?
Well, it's mad, wild, out of sight. Here I was on the boat coming over, still fighting all the trauma of Dad's death, and suddenly I met this marvelous Englishman.
Well?
Only a little less marvelous than you turned out to be, of course. And just like that, I did a crazy thing.
What was that?
I married him. I'm not really Beth Stanton anymore. I'm Mrs. Charles Rudbeck.
Well, dear me, dear me. Congratulations.
I deserve them. I'm so lucky.
Well, I'd like to meet your husband. What's he like?
Too much. He's tall, black-haired, blue eyes, and just so Englishy English.
Well, now, will you live here or in America?
Oh, it has to be here because of Charles.
Ah, What's his line of work?
He doesn't have to work, actually, although he is a very fine artist.
Well, I envy this chap in more ways than one. Why doesn't he have to work?
Oh, well, because most of his time is spent in managing his estate. Which reminds me, I've got to run. I'm off to the ancestral home in the Cotswolds to take up my position as Lady of the Manor.
Ah, Dorset, eh? Lovely country. Whereabouts?
Chauncey Castle. I expect you know it.
Well, I'm afraid I'm a bit shaky on Burke's peerage.
Oh, Charles isn't an earl or a duke, really. It's just his family line. I don't even know what his title is exactly.
Hmm. Would you like me to find out?
No. In this day and age, what does it matter? Now, Uncle Alfie, I must go. Charles went on ahead of me with his sister. Nora insisted she had to have a day to get things ready, and I told Charles I needed a full day to shop for a sort of late trousseau. So he drove her up with most of my bags.
All right, my dear. I shan't keep you.
Give me a few weeks to get settled. And I promise you'll be our first house guest.
You only have to ask me. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. A very tasty young lady.
Hmm. And a hasty one.
How's that, sir?
Marry in haste, repent at...
Beg pardon, Inspector?
Oh, nothing. Too many years a policeman, I suppose. One tends to fall into the habit of looking for trouble. Still, she is the daughter of the best friend I ever had, and she must be a very rich young woman. I say, Crothers, rustle me a copy of Burke's Peerage, will you? Something I'd like to have a look at.
So, my lady, how do you like your castle?
Oh, Charles, it's something else.
It's what?
I mean it's too much. It's magnificent. It's breathtaking, thrilling. There just aren't enough words. But it's sort of creepy, too.
Creepy?
Well, you know, everything's so old and so big.
Yes, and so very drafty.
Well, I'm glad we won't be living here.
Well, we can if you want, my darling.
Oh, no, please, no. I feel like an exhibit. It's so comfortable at the gatehouse.
Yes. Except for poor Nora. She is sort of underfoot.
Oh, come on. It's not that small. And I'm not going to put Nora out of her own home.
You're sure you don't mind, dear?
Are all these paintings legitimate ancestors?
Yes.
Charles?
What is it, Beth?
Who's that?
Ah, yes. I thought that one might pique your curiosity. That was the Lady Elizabeth Chauncey. Beyond question, the most attractive of all the family. Until now.
But she looks just like me.
A very pallid copy, my darling. Besides, she was very dark. Not like my fair and golden-haired American beauty.
Well, still, imagine all those years ago, someone in your family who... Oh, when did she die?
Oh, somewhere in the middle 1500s. She died very young, as the story goes.
How?
Oh... Accidentally. Darling, I think we ought to get back to the gatehouse. It's almost time for tea.
Do you have milk in your tea, Beth?
No, thanks.
Hmm. Well, how did you like the castle?
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's terribly impressive and fascinating. And
inexpressibly gloomy, damp, and musty.
Well, I didn't say that.
Oh, but it was what you were thinking.
No, you're marvelous. Yes, I thought all of those things. I just hope Charles doesn't want to live there.
Oh, heavens dear, not a chance. You see all the rebuilding, refurbishing that's going on there?
Yes, I did. That's why I thought maybe...
Oh, not intended for private life, Beth. Strictly for the public.
Beg pardon?
Well, the only way of supporting these charming and historic white elephants is to open them to the public for a small fee, which mounts up.
Oh, what a shame. Your own home... Poor Charles.
Oh, he doesn't mind any more than I do. The place is much too big and full of cobwebs and ghosts. It gives me the shivers.
Ghosts? You mean real ones that actually haunt?
Well, if you want to believe in such things. Oh, the usual clanking of armor and dragging of chains. Except, of course, for the Lady Elizabeth.
The one whose portrait I saw today?
Oh, I'm not sure if I know you did. Oh, we've had a great many, Elizabeth.
Was it the very young one? The one who looked like me?
Oh, that would be she.
Yes, you do favor her. Charles was so funny about her. I mean, he didn't seem to want to talk about how she died.
Oh, jolly right, I should think. Gruesome, silly story. Well, she was married to one of the first Earls of Chauncey. A man quite literally, believe it or not, old enough to be her grandparent. And so, quite naturally, she fell in love with one of the young bloods who traipsed around in the retinue.
Oh, what was his name?
Oh, heavens, I haven't the foggiest. No one remembers him. At all events, sex being just as urgent in those days, if not quite so publicized, the two of them were caught cavorting in flagrante delicto, I think is the polite Latin phrase. And the elderly Earl was quite put out about it. So much so that he had the poor little thing beheaded.
Oh,
violent times, you know, violent measures. Even that wasn't quite enough for him.
What do you mean? What else could he do to us?
Well, it gets a bit bloody, dear. Maybe we'd better just...
No, I want to know.
Well, I'm afraid he had the head impaled on a pike and left to wither on the battlements. The body, of course, was interred.
Oh, my God.
Oh, nasty types they were in those days.
How old was she?
Oh, see, I think I remember. Oh, yes, 24.
Just my age. So young to die and be buried forever.
Well, the legend is, of course, that she hasn't been. Our parlor legend.
You mean she haunts?
Oh, rather. She was quite a horsewoman, history tells us. And any night, but particularly when the moon is full, she rides the grounds, searching for her lost head. She's quite famous locally. I must admit, when the wind's from the west, I sometimes swear myself I can hear the hoofbeats.
Poor Elizabeth. Poor. No. What's that? Charles, wake up.
What is it, Dolly?
Do you hear them?
Why?
Somebody riding a horse.
At 2:30 in the morning.
But can't you hear them? You don't suppose Elizabeth...
Oh, that stupid legend. I'm really quite furious at Nora...
No, don't be, please. I expect I'm the stupid one. It's all so new to me. I'll settle down.
Let me assist in that process.
Oh, darling. I don't hear the hoofbeats anymore.
You never did. Just the excited beating of your husband's heart.
Oh, I love you.
And I love you. You're so lovely. I can't wait to paint you.
I'll sit for you.
Do you know what I'd like to do tomorrow?
What?
Make a life mask of you.
Oh, how do you do that?
You'll see. Tomorrow. You'll see.
Charles really has something more sinister than history lurking in the dark corners of Chauncey Castle. And what, if one examines it, is a life mask? A mold of the features, once done in plaster of Paris, today in modern plastic, a technique often employed to perpetuate someone departed from this life and originally named the death mask. I'll be back shortly with Act Two. Have you ever had a mask made of your face? It's a quite terrifying experience. The material is laid on like shaving soap or a mud bath, and you lie there while it hardens and sets. In the last moments, there is an excessive heat and a feeling as if you will be buried forever in concrete or stone. You can breathe, but the shut-in feeling, the claustrophobia, suggests you can't. That maybe whoever it is making the mask wants to kill you, smother you, like Beth, wordless, speechless. helpless at this moment.
Hand me the straws, Nora.
Here you are. What a really dreadful thing to do to the child.
Now, don't try to talk, dearest. The plastic is just beginning to set. It won't be much longer. I'm going to have to cover your mouth now, so I'll put these straws in your nose, and you'll be able to breathe. Now, the thing is not to get panicky.
Oh, the whole thing is perfectly barbarous.
Shut up, Nora. There's not a thing in the world to worry about there. It just sort of draws, and there's a feeling that it's clamping down. But it's soon over. Trust me, darling. Please don't worry about a thing.
I thought I was going to die.
I've got the most beautiful mold of your face. You'll see it was worth it.
Oh, honestly, darling, I was scared. I'm like Elizabeth. I'm much too young to die.
Will you forget her?
Yeah, I'd like to, but she haunts me. I never ever thought about death before, and now suddenly... Darling, have you made a will?
Good Lord, Beth. You are morbid. No, since you ask.
Well, you should. Well, everyone should.
Well, I expect you're quite right. I'm rather careless about money matters. I'll take care of it first thing in the morning.
May I come with you?
Why, if you want. But...
I want to make one too, Charles. It's really quite important.
Well, my dear, if you insist.
See, I never told you, Charles, that I'm really worth an awful lot of money.
Crothers.
Yes, Inspector.
Remember that chap in Margate we had to look into because he kept getting rid of well-to-do wives at quite a clip?
That'd be Humbert, sir. Tall, dark chap with a thick beard. Made a joke about Bluebeard.
Did I? Have we a photo of him handy?
I think I could dig one up.
Why don't you? And by the by, next weekend's Halloween. I think I might leave crime to the small fry and take a busman's holiday.
Oh, you deserve it, sir. Where away?
Well, I might take a run up to the Cotswolds. Sort of a sentimental journey, you might say.
Morning, Beth. Special today, kippers. Oh, no, thank you. Not for me.
Oh, out of sorts, dear?
I didn't sleep so well. Just a little orange juice and coffee.
Oh, absolutely. Well, anything wrong?
Oh, no, not really. You know, I guess maybe I ought to look out for those toddies of yours.
Oh, why, Beth, nothing but a little scotch, sugar, and lemon.
I didn't mean I suspected the ingredients. It's just that maybe I can't handle quite so much whiskey.
Oh, there was only a nip in there. Child, you do look a little wan. Should we have Dr. Yule in to have a glance at you, do you think?
Oh, I can't need a doctor. I'm always so healthy.
Oh, change of clime and all that, dear, and damp old England. Flu is always floating around. Why don't we just play safe?
What do you think, Doctor?
Oh, well, nothing serious, of course, but a high-strung young lady, you know.
Well, sensitive, naturally. But high-strung.
Well, you know Americans, very suggestible. What is this notion she has about somebody on horseback without a head?
I beg your pardon?
Some legend about a girl who looked like her centuries ago.
I haven't the foggiest idea.
Yeah. Well, for the moment, there's no real concern. I've left a sedative to be filled at the pharmacist with your sister. Convenient thing she happens to be an RN.
You're sure you're up to this, Beth?
Oh, Charles, I simply had to get out of doors and away from the cottage. Let's just enjoy a walk into the castle and pretend it's all the beginning.
Well, now, just stay well in the center of the drawbridge. Needs a lot of repairs.
You know, it's just incredible to think that knights in armor rode across this bridge. How far do you suppose it's down to the bottom of the old moat?
50, 60 feet, perhaps. A mess, isn't it? All those weeds and jagged rocks.
Can we go in and poke about?
Your wish is my command. Beth?
Right here.
Where on earth have you got to?
Like a magnet. Right back to her.
The Lady Elizabeth.
She fascinates me so.
Well, there really isn't all that much resemblance.
Oh, I don't agree. She could be my twin. It's funny.
What's funny?
But it's so hard to put into words, Charles. It's just a feeling. I mean, her portrait is just as old, and the paint is just as cracked as all the others, but somehow she feels so immediate, so today. Almost as if she just sat for the portrait, and the artist had just finished it.
That is rather strange. You can see that the pigments are medieval. The patina is centuries old, just like the model.
I know. I should stop identifying myself with her just because of a chance resemblance. Oh, Charles, I'm cold. Let's get back to the gatehouse and that nice living room fire.
Oh, you do look a bit knocked about, Beth. Perhaps you ought to turn in a little early.
I guess so.
On top of everything else, I do think our damp weather does take a bit of getting used to. I have the kettle on the boil to whip you up a nice stout toddy.
Oh, I don't want anything to drink.
Oh, just a bit, love, to disguise the taste of old Dr. Yule's sedative. Why he has to stick to powders instead of up-to-date pills is beyond me.
Well, while you're brewing that toddy, I have some letters to finish.
Letters?
Oh, I've been very remiss. I have all sorts of friends and half-relations in America who don't even know I'm married. I've got to write them.
Oh, of course. Now, you go and get them finished. And I'll brew you up something nice to put you to sleep.
There you are, darling. Nora's best. Plus Dr. Yule's guaranteed potion for a restful night.
Thanks, Charles. Oh, I'm sorry to be such a bother.
Hush. Get all your letters finished?
Yes. I must mail them first thing tomorrow.
Let me have them, darling. I have to run into the village to pick up the post. I'll send them off then.
Okay.
And by the by, I hate to bother you with this, but as long as you have pen in hand, want to look this over and sign it?
What is it?
That last will and testament that you insisted on making. Technically, I suppose I should have John and Nellie witness your signing, but I'm sure they'll take the will for the deed, if you'll excuse a complicated pun. Sign it later.
Oh, yes, let's get it out of the way. I have enough morbid thoughts as it is.
What morbid thoughts?
There. I hope to God it never has to be executed.
Amen. Drink your toddy, and it will relax you. All you need is a good night's sleep.
I'd give anything for that. If I could just stop dreaming about her, or hearing those hoofbeats. Charles.
What, dear?
You don't think I'm going crazy, losing my mind?
Oh, now, come on. Drink up. And I'll hold you tight till you go to sleep.
That's strong. But it does feel good. Charles, you're so good to me. How can I ever repay you?
You will, darling. You will.
Charles.
What?
Charles, wake up. Can't you hear them? There they are again.
What is it, Beth?
Hoofbeats. This time they're coming straight for the house.
Where are you going, Beth?
I've got to see.
It's the dead of night. You can't see anything.
It's bright moonlight out. Oh, God. She's right in the courtyard below.
Stop it, Beth.
She's throwing back the hood of the cage.
Will you come back to bed?
She has no head.
There's nothing out there.
Oh, no. Her head. Get her hand. She's holding it up by the hair. Charles, come quick.
All right.
He looks 1,000 years old. Oh, but it's my face. Charles, help me. It's me. Ah!
question narrows itself down to a very simple one. Which lady has lost her head completely? Elizabeth from the past, who will not stay at rest? Or Beth from the present, who seems bound to raise her from the grave? I'll be back with at least some of the answers when I return shortly with Act Three.
And now another story of the ball and chain as Kellogg's Special K presents Veronica and Jack.
Oh, Jeffrey, isn't this romantic? Out in a quiet lake at night with you rowing the boat.
Yes, Veronica, it's really neat.
Jeffrey, what was that?
Frogs.
Frogs that go bonk?
They're pretty weird frogs.
Oh, Jeffrey, you're such a car. You have a ball and chain, not the ones they use in those Special K commercials.
Yes, Veronica, it symbolizes my few pounds of extra weight. But I'm going to get rid of it.
How?
By exercising. You know, like rowing this boat and eating smart at every meal, starting with a Special K breakfast.
You mean a 1 ounce bowl of high-protein Special K, 4 ounces of skim milk, orange juice, and coffee?
Precisely. It's less than 240 calories, and it tastes delicious. It'll help me get rid of this ball and chain.
I'll help, too, Jeff. After all, we're all in the same boat.
You have a ball and chain, too.
Your happy ending could begin with a Special K breakfast from Kellogg's.
Back once again to the problem of our twin damsels in distress. The medieval one has vanished into thin air by now, if indeed she ever materialized from there, while our modern Beth has confounded us and her husband by doing something quite medieval, or at least old-fashioned.
Beth? Mm-hmm. Beth?
Yes.
Beth, it's Charles. Wake up.
What? Charles? Oh, what happened to me? What happened to her? Charles!
Now, darling, listen to me. There was nobody there.
Oh, but I saw her. I saw her sitting side saddle on the horse, and when she dropped the hood...
Beth, it was a dream.
She had no head. No head at all. Except in her hand.
You've got to stop it, Beth.
She was holding it by the hair, and the face was all wrinkled like a mummy.
Beth, I...
And it was my face. Just like me. And do you know what she was doing? Do you know what she was doing?
Beth, you've got to stop this. I can't...
She was beckoning to me, Charles, calling me down. She wanted me. She wanted my head.
Stop it, Beth. Stop it, Beth! Beth!
Do you know the awful thing? I could feel myself being tugged, pulled toward her. If I hadn't fainted, I... Oh, God. God, Charles, what's the matter with me? What's wrong? What's that?
Beth, get hold of yourself. It must be Nora. Yes?
Charles, has something happened?
Come in, Nora. The door's open.
Oh, bless us. What's the matter with the child?
She just had a bad dream.
It wasn't a dream. The headless Elizabeth again?
Yes, she thought she heard her ride into the court below the window.
I did see her. Oh, let me take the child, Charles.
No. Get her sedative powder. We've got to calm her
down.
I
don't want any medicine.
Just let us take care of you, Beth. We know what we're doing.
Well, I think we've got her under control now.
I'm so sorry to rout you out so early in the morning, particularly on All Hallows Day.
Oh, that's quite all right, Mr. Rudley, quite all right. You'd never have gotten her calmed down without a shot from me.
Oh, silly children and their Halloween pranks. I can't imagine how they got this far out of the village.
Did you see this apparition that scared Mrs. Rudley so?
Oh, good Lord, no. By the time I got to the window, the yard was bare. How the young'uns could have disappeared so far?
Oh, I don't think this was any childish prank.
What?
No, it's something much more serious, I'm afraid.
You don't mean sleepwalking?
Oh, dear me, that too. I see. Now, you say she lost her father recently.
Yes, a year ago.
And they were very close.
Yes, extraordinarily so, I would say. What is it, Doctor? You don't think...
I'll tell you what I do think, Mr. Rudley, and I'm going to be very honest. This case, your wife's problem, is far beyond a country doctor like myself. I think she needs psychiatric help.
Oh, no.
For her own sake. If it weren't for the fact that your sister is a registered nurse, my recommendation would be to have her immediately hospitalized. Psychiatric diagnosis is still my recommendation. I believe it's vital to keep her from harming herself.
Harming herself? How?
Well, I don't know that. But I do know that for whatever reason, she is, well, in layman's terms, a nervous wreck. Hypertense, in spite of all the sedation I've been giving her. Subject to delusions and the victim of a death wish. You must get help very quickly. Help from a specialist. And she should not be left alone for a moment.
Well, that's quite a blow.
I'm sorry, but even suicide is not out of the question.
Good Lord. I wonder, could I talk to her now?
Well, she may be a bit drowsy, but if she's not asleep, yes. Now, I'd like to suggest some doctor...
Doctor, I want you to. I have to go into the village to pick up the post. Would you mind dropping me? We can talk on the way.
Yes, splendid.
I'll only be a minute. I want to go back to Beth. Meet you at your car.
Oh, it's you, Charles.
Is she asleep?
No. No, I'm awake. Charles?
Yes, darling?
Don't leave me. Stay with me. Don't leave me.
Of course I won't leave you. You can't get rid of me.
I've been very silly, haven't I? I can't quite remember.
There's nothing to remember. What you need's a nice, long sleep. And while you're having it, I'm going to the village for a few minutes, get the post, and a few things we need for dinner.
And the post? Mail? Oh, yes, don't forget to mail my letters.
I should say not. Have them right here in my pocket.
You won't be long.
No, not over an hour. And Nora will be right here with you every moment I'm gone.
Beth, dear, don't you worry. Charles and I know just how to take care of you. Yes?
Oh, how do you do? Are Mr. and Mrs. Rudley at home?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Mr. Rudley's off to the village, and I'm afraid Mrs. Rudley is indisposed.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not serious, I hope?
Oh, no, just a little bout with the flu. May I say who was calling?
Oh, yes, of course. Alfred Finchley.
Oh, well, are you a friend of Mrs. Rudley's?
No, not really. Old army chum of her father's.
Oh.
Just happened to be driving by, and I'd heard she'd been married, and I wanted to, you know, pay my respects.
Oh, well, I know Beth will be so sorry not to have seen you. I'm her sister-in-law, by the way.
How do you do?
Now, perhaps later this afternoon, if there was some place she could call you.
Oh, no. I'm driving back to London.
Eh, well, that's the lot, Mr. Rudley. You owe me twopence on the one overweight letter.
There you are, Mr. Morgan.
Anything to go out, sir?
No letters this time.
I thought I saw some in your pocket.
No, these are not going to be posted. I'll take care of those myself.
As you will, sir. It's just opening time. Want to step in the pub and have a nice warming beer?
Not this time, Mr. Morgan. Got quite a long walk home. That'll be on my way if I hope to make it by lunch. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Hey, that's it. 11, sir. All open for business. Not one ruddy customer. Oh, afternoon, Governor. Just 10 minutes before 2, so if you want one, better step lively into the bar before closing time.
Thank you, Barkey. I think I will.
Name is Margit, sir. Donald Margit, proprietor. And what'll it be?
Well, I think I should have a gin and, if you don't mind.
Yep, coming right up. Just passing through?
Yes. Lovely country.
Oh, we like it.
Yeah, quite a bit of work going on at Chauncey Castle.
There's the gin and, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, yes. Going to be good for business.
Oh, so?
Going to open it to the public, the family is. Make a tourist attraction.
Ah, well, I thought it was because the present incumbent has got married.
Present incumbent? You mean the doddery old duke?
Oh, no. I meant young Mr. Rudley.
Oh, him? Why, Lord bless your soul, he's not family, sir.
Oh, really?
No, no, he's just renting. Lease is almost up, I think.
Bradley, hmm? I think I once knew him. What's he look like?
You should have been here when I opened. You could have seen for yourself. Tall, dark chap he is.
Yes, he wouldn't by any chance be this chap in his picture, eh?
Eh, well, no. That'd be hard to tell. I mean, Mr. Ridley's clean-shaven and a lot thinner than this chap. Still, take away the beard. Cut off some of the hair. Eh, no, I just wouldn't know.
Do you have a doctor in town?
Oh, yes, sir. That'd be Dr. Yule. You'd find him right across the green, sir. Good timing, too, because I have to close.
Timing couldn't be worse, Nora. She never mentioned she knew anyone in England.
Oh, I don't think we have to worry. He was just a little wisp of a man. Very inoffensive.
You doctor her food at lunch. Get another of your special toddies into her before she goes to bed. We'll do it tonight.
Well, it seems a bit soon. A lot faster than usual. But if you insist, darling, naturally we'll go ahead. Kiss me.
Yes, sister dear.
Well, at least she is the last one. She has enough money to leave you. So I can stop sharing you with the pigeons.
Inspector Finchley, Scotland Yard, Doctor. My credentials.
Oh, dear me, a policeman, but why on earth?
Could you answer my question?
Well, of course. Yes, I've called on her several times in the last 10 days or so.
What's the matter with her, Doctor?
Well, that's rather difficult to say. She has, delusions.
Caused by what?
Oh, now, Inspector, that would take a psychiatrist to explain.
She couldn't be under the influence of drugs, could she? Does this man look at all familiar to you, Dr. Yule?
No, I can't say. Just a minute. Let me get my magnifying glass. Now, where did I... Oh, yes. Here it is. Yes. Oh, yes, by George. Partly the facial structure, of course, but this is what did it. You see that old scar there bisecting the left eyebrow, more or less?
Yes.
Something a doctor would notice because it wasn't a very good job of suturing. Yes, I think I could swear... Shave off the mustache, the beard, and the sideburns. By George, you'd have Charles Rudley.
Or George Humbert.
Thank God for the help of Elizabeth's phantom steed. I thought we'd never get her downstairs. You wouldn't think she'd be so heavy.
Dead weight, brother dear.
Not quite yet. Poor Beth.
A pity. There's no time for sentiment. She's worth a lot more to us. Dead.
Now help me get her off the horse and then get him back to the stable and call the doctor.
After you throw her over into the moat, you'd better make very sure she's dead.
I'll make sure. All right. I'll get her off the horse.
Stand still, Rudley. Just hold it right there.
What?
I've got you covered. This is the police. Don't move.
Oh, you fool. Well, they're not going to get me.
It's too late.
Get out of my way.
Watch it. Don't shoot after the horse. We don't want to harm the girl.
I just can't believe it, Uncle Alfie.
Well, I can't blame you, my dear. Nasty chap you got mixed up with. Three others before you he got away with.
The same way?
With variations. He got a little too fancy on this one. The false portrait, but the apparent nervous ailments and the sleepwalking were the key to all of them.
I feel as though I'm going to be sick.
Well, it'll pass, dear. He was a bad lot. Worth not one single tear.
And Nora, she was the one on horseback?
With the costume rigged to appear as if the wearer was headless, and a papier-mâché head made from your life mask.
I think she's almost worse than him. And to think she got away scot-free.
Not quite, my dear. We'll catch up with her. Now, you rest a while and don't worry. I'm right outside. As long as I'm around, you'll never have to worry again. Good night.
Good night, Uncle Alfie.
All right, Doctor?
Oh, yes, she'll be fine. You say you did catch up with the woman?
Nora. A lot more than just police caught up with her. You know the work they're doing on the castle?
Yes, of course.
Well, apparently, they found some structural weakness in the arch of the main gate. So they supported it by stretching a thin steel cable from one side to the other. Well over normal head height, of course, if you're walking. But unfortunately, not high enough to clear someone on horseback.
Good God, no.
Oh, yes. Cut her head off as clean as a whistle.
Charles Rudley was eventually convicted of murder of one of his earlier wives. He was sentenced to life imprisonment. His common law wife, Nora, lost her life and, of course, her head. It's nice to consider that, in her case at least, the punishment fit the crime. I'll be back shortly. Uncle Alfie proved to be right about the resiliency of youth. It took a couple of years, but eventually Beth settled down and is happily married to a psychiatrist in Duluth. As for this fable itself, it also goes to prove that time not only heals all wounds, but eventually wounds all heals. Our cast included Kim Hunter, Nick Pryor, Bryna Rayburn, Ian Martin, and Court Benson. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Makers of Cold Water Omo, the sun beat down relentlessly on the village and the dusty hairpin road that led up to it. A few goats sought the shade of the gnarled olive trees. It was siesta time. No one stirred. Up the hill, at an incredibly slow pace, came a donkey cart, its driver apparently asleep under his wide-brimmed hat. At the crest of the hill, the cart stopped. The driver turned and looked over his shoulder. Lying on the sacks in the open cart was a figure in soldier's uniform. The driver made a gesture with his thumb, indicating a small, whitewashed house. The soldier stirred, jumped to the ground, and approached the house. A dog lying near the door looked up and scratched itself sleepily. Behind the slatted windows, two men watched.
This is one of them?
What do you think, Arcos?
It's the right size, exactly the right size. In fact, Martin, if he was dressed in a London City suit with a bowler and umbrella, that could be John Steed. Take him in.
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Episode 1 of this story, in which John Steed and Emma Peel journey to Spain to find a great deal of heat, a lot of flies, a mysterious intrigue, and too many Olays. In London, the weather was miserable. Drizzle fell from the grey, clouded sky. A keen wind whipped round the street corners. There was the inevitable traffic jam to aggravate Mrs. Peel's slight depression as she made her way towards John Steed's apartment. By the time she got to the Mews, she was irritable and scowling. Steed's front door was open. She knocked and entered.
Anyone at home? Steed? Steed!
Buenos dias, senorita. Pleased to accept.
John Steed entered the room from the kitchen, clicking a pair of castanets. He stopped in front of Mrs. Peel with a sharp rap of his heels and presented her with a rose.
A rose? Thank you, Steed. Am I supposed to put it between my teeth and join in, or what?
Not or what, Mrs. Peel, please. Care for a glass of rare Spanish sherry?
Oh, well, it might keep out the cold.
Hola.
Steed produced a decanter and two glasses as though by magic and poured the sherry expertly and gently.
Well, come on, let's have it.
Patience, patience. Sherry must flow into the glass.
I didn't mean the drink. I can wait for that. What I can't wait to know is why all this Spanish kick.
Well, just getting in a little practice, that's all. Here, salute.
Your old-fashioned English bottoms up.
Not where we're going.
And where are we going?
Tarragon, near Saragossa in sunny Spain. Olé.
You're serious, Steve?
Never more so. Mother phoned up. It's all arranged. We leave this afternoon.
Oh, Steve, how splendid. Sunshine, vino, lazing by the sea.
There's no sea near Tarragon, but there should be plenty of vino. There's also a peace conference going on. Mother wants us to keep an eye on a couple of dubious delegates. I shouldn't imagine it'll be too difficult. I said, si, si. You agree?
Si, salute.
I think it is all ready.
Good. Then we had better go now. Down through the barrier. Come, follow me.
At the bullring at Tarragon, two men pushed their way through the crowds to a door which led down a flight of stone steps under the changing rooms. It was dim and cool in the inner room. Only the faint sound of the bullfight above them could be heard. Strapped to a chair in the middle of the room was a man in soldier's uniform. He had a mask on his face. Standing over him, working on the mask, was a heavily built doctor in surgeon's robes. The man called Arcos approached.
You are ready for us, doctor?
I think this is the best I can do, Arcos.
Then remove the mask. Let us see.
The doctor skillfully inserted a scalpel into a crack in the plaster cast and broke the mask in two pieces. The soldier groaned and gasped for air. Puzzled and sweating, he gazed around him.
Please, please. What you do to me? What you do?
Markin approached over the stone floor, took a hand mirror from the clinical-looking bench, and held it in front of the soldier.
Look how pretty you are, my friend. But that is not my face. That is not me. It's not my face.
But it did look remarkably like John Steed's face.
What do you think, Argos?
The nose is wrong. The hairline, too. The ears.
It's the best I can do. Yeah, compare with the photograph.
Arcos picked up some full-plate photographs of John Steed and then threw them down impatiently.
We cannot work from photographs. It is impossible. Impossible.
What can we do?
We need Steed, the real man. We need Steed himself. To not work without him, we must capture Steed.
And what about him?
Markin indicated the soldier strapped to the chair. Arcos drew a gun from beneath his coat.
Dispensable.
No. No. No!
The Miranda Hotel at Tarragon is not lavish. Visually, it's a piece of old Spain. In the taxi upon arrival, Mrs. Peel was enchanted.
Oh, Steve, this is delightful. The real thing.
Yes, I hope the plumbing's for real, too.
They climbed out of the taxi and walked into the hotel, unaware that under the trees across the road they were being watched by Arcos and Markin.
That is Steed.
And the woman?
I do not know. His woman, I suppose. She will not bother us.
If she does, then she too will have to be taken care of. Come, let us make the phone call.
Upstairs, Mrs. Peel was shown into a simple, charming room with shuttered windows. She tipped the elderly porter and moved to the shutters, drawing them aside and gazing down into the street. She noticed two men moving away towards a red saloon. Steed entered the room.
Olé! Come hold of her.
You've been at the phrase book again.
That's right. I've finally mastered the Spanish for my grandfather's ear trumpet has been struck by lightning. Terribly useful.
I think I'm going to like it here. What's your room like?
Oh, very different.
Oh?
Yes, indeed. My dressing table's at least 6 inches near the window.
Hmm. Who'd have thought it, Steed? A holiday at last.
Well, it's not a holiday, actually. I thought I'd explain.
Well, almost a holiday.
We're official observers at the peace conference. Very serious business.
Well, I hope the peace conference lives up to its name. Very thoughtful of them to hold it in Spain.
Very thoughtful of the Spaniards to instigate it. Fancy an anisette?
Never tried it.
Highly recommend it. Jigger of anisette, piece of ice, splash of cool water. Yeah, let's go down and find the bar.
Steve stepped back to allow Mrs. Peel to precede him into the corridor. As she did so, a voice said,
"Will you marry me?"
A startlingly good-looking man, blonde and athletic, stood framed in the doorway.
"Will you be my wife?" "Good day to you, sir. Please, madam, will you marry me?"
Marry you?
Please, I implore you to be my wife. Only for 5 minutes or so.
Say
nothing. Leave everything to me.
Oh, Baron. Oh, gee, Baron, Kurt, baby. Say it isn't true. You promised you'd choose between me and that redhead. Oh.
Why, Helga, imagine seeing you. May I present my wife? My wife...
Emma.
My wife, Emma.
Your wife? Gee, you didn't say anything about having a wife. You never said anything about being married. Oh, Kurt, baby. Oh, how mortifying! Another one out of circulation! Goodbye forever!
Goodbye, Helga. You have earned my undying gratitude. May I present myself to Baron Funkert, always at your service?
I'm John Steed. This is Emma Peel.
How do you do?
You must forgive my intrusion, but as you have seen...
You have your problems.
My own fault. A foolish mistake. I tried to be friendly.
And the thing grew on you?
We understand each other, Mr. Steed. Thank you again, Miss Peel.
Mrs. Peel. It wouldn't have worked out. Bigamy.
I kiss your hand. It was a pleasure being married to you. Adios.
Baron von Kurt clicked his heels smartly, turned and strolled down the corridor. Mrs. Peel turned with a shrug of her elegant shoulders and raised an eyebrow at Steed.
Well, that's the trouble with these holiday romances. They never last.
A short while after that, while sipping anisette on the terrace, Steed was called to the telephone.
John Steed?
Senor Steed, welcome to Spain. Captain Jose of the Spanish Secret Service. We have yet to meet, see?
Well, I'm delighted to talk to you, Captain. I hope we meet soon.
There are many things to discuss, you understand. You could call upon me, perhaps immediately, por favor?
Well, I think I can manage it. Can you give me the address?
14 Cala de Luna. It's not far from
14 Calle de Luna. Right, I'll take a taxi and be with you in half an hour.
Muchas gracias, senor. Adios.
Adios.
So Steed ordered a taxi. When it came, Arcos was at the wheel.
14 Calle de Luna, por favor.
Si, senor.
A short while later, while rounding a corner of the narrow streets, Arcos stopped the taxi. The door of the taxi opened. Markin jumped in.
Oh, I beg your pardon, this taxi...
Buenas noches, senor. Sleep well. Drive on, Arcos.
The Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Brought to you by the makers of Coldwater Omo.
Hello,
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.